This week on RSVB Update, Charge Training Cave is the main attraction, and this has severely hot ramifications, heralding the return of line firemaking. Also, a recap of the summer content showcase at Game Jam 2018. This is RSVB Update, episode 667, recorded Thursday, April 19th, 2018, pitching line firemaking. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for another episode of RSVB Update. Just Tannis and myself in this week. This week appeared to be nice and quiet, and this is a general trend that we appear to be saying these days, isn't it?
You mean you're not fired up?
Yes, there was a good, healthy number of fire puns in that news post this week. It's a scorcher. You can fire at will. You're just lighting things up and getting ready to go do that line fire making. And, I don't know what the community thought of this, from reading in between the lines of the behind the scenes post and, what was talked about, I knew what was coming. I don't know if the rest of the community did because, this update is either the best thing to happen to fire making, or it's a complete letdown, depending on your perspective of how you see things. So we are, of course, talking about the return of line fire making.
And a lot of people I talk to have just really been meh about it. Like, it just didn't seem to make much of a difference. Not a lot of waves were made with this one. Maybe if you're, a really super efficient skiller. Like maybe.
Right. And that's where what we're going to talk about numbers wise after where this is going to come in.
Right.
But at the same time, it's fire making.
It's fire making and it's expensive. It was expensive when this dropped.
I just want to get one elephant out of the room first. What use does fire making have at having a higher level? That you absolutely need it for, that you absolutely must have 85 fire making or 90 fire making or 92 fire making or 96 fire making.
Absolutely nothing. We might, what they were talking about, maybe adding it to smithing, like when the smithing rework comes out, maybe. I don't even know if they decided that or not. So there's absolutely zero use for fire making. None.
Exactly. And the use in smithing was, you're gonna have a bit of a higher fire making level, and that's gonna influence how fast your heat's gonna go down. So
yeah.
There is nothing mechanically wrong with the updates that we got this week. I just want to get that out of the way first. The letdown for most people comes because, they're saying return of line fire making, but it's fire making. What are you going to do with fire making, right? And that's basically the bush we're dancing around right now.
For sure. And, I've been kind of hard on this update just because, for one, it is fire making, and that's probably the most useless skill in the whole entire game. On top of that, I don't feel like, I'm all about the more active the play, the more the reward, the better. I like that. That's something that I truly believe in. But I don't feel like you do that by looking backwards. You do that by looking forwards. And you can't look more backwards than line fire making.
Right.
On top of that, it's ugly. I'm sorry. It's ugly. Like, I just feel like it just dirties up the game. I am not a fan.
And this is where the next part of this update comes in. The eagle-eyed who are watching this might have seen, this is going to be about fire making. This is going to be completely on the surface with line fire making. But no, this is actually not the case here.
Yeah.
The whole point of this update is that it is an update to the Charge fire making event, which you unlock after a fire maker's curse.
Right.
Which is at
it's
Eagle's
still
Peak.
Ugly. Yeah, and still ugly though.
The previous way this worked is you would go to this Char's training area after a Firemaker's Curse, and you would be able to go complete this firemaking event once a week, and you'd have 10 minutes to do it, make as many symbols as you want. And in general, you would get around, you know, 10, 20, maybe 25K per each of the symbols that you made. And that was the idea behind it. Now, the amount of XP that you have gotten here from the symbols has been decreased because you can just do this at will. You can fire at will, so to speak. Yes, I worked that in. Mm-hmm. So when you go down there, you get your you get a pitch can that's just sitting there, the pitch can you use during the quest, and you effectively have the 7x7 grid, and you can make a number of symbols there. You can make a spiral, like a spiral square, and it works its way towards the center. That gives the most XP because it's got the most fires that you need to light. And it's worth noting that you can place the pitch can on the action bar, and then as you're doing that, you basically just walk and click with your mouse, and then the fire appears beneath you. Doing the spiral gives you around 8,200 XP for each time you do it. I was averaging about 7 or 8 spirals per 5 minutes. So that would be a decent way of gaining XP. You can also make a Zaro symbol, and that one gives you around 2,700 XP. There's also a cross, which is the same amount of XP as the Zaro symbol, but I don't know, maybe easier to make. It might be a matter of perspective on that, and that the reason that they're the same is because they offer you the same number of symbols all the way across that you need to make. So the amount of XP you get is determined by the symbol. You can also make a box, which is about 5,500 XP, and then a concentric box, which gives you around 6,600 XP. And the idea behind this is that the faster you are, and you know, the faster you move around, you can get more XP from this. There were people reporting upwards of 12, 13, 14 symbols being made at a time, but you know, I'm obviously not clicking as fast, so that's the whole idea behind the Char's Firemaking event. And this is what this update focused around. You know, it in many ways, they call this update the return of line firemaking on the news post. Mm-hmm. But it's completely different. And the core of the update is down in the Char's training cave, focusing on, you know, removing this as one of the weekly scape features and bringing it to something you can do whenever you want. And
which, I mean, that's kind of confusing, though, wasn't
right.
it? Because, for one, I asked around when this dropped. I was asking, you know, different people, friends, and stuff. Like, have you ever done the Char's Firemaking event? I couldn't find anyone that's ever done it. Most of us, after we got done with that quest, we ran as far and as fast as we could.
Yeah,
and never went back.
Yeah.
And it does speed up your surface world fire making, right?
Like yes. Now, when you're at level 70, when you're at level 70, now you do get an increase in surface level fire making. So there is that.
Okay.
Though, I mean, it's hard to tell because I didn't have numbers on how long it would take to do that before. But you know, it's definitely noticeable when you apply the pitch can to it. Now, XP wise, you might be wondering what was happening, and on average I was pulling in around 290,000 XP per 5 minutes, or sorry, per hour. That would be insane.
Oh, come on now, we can't have that kind of math.
290,000 fire making XP per hour doing this without boosts, without bonus XP, and, you know, with boosts and, you know, being more efficient in terms of managing the square, maybe using some abilities like Surge and whatnot, you could get that up a little bit more. And, you know, this is, I think, I'm going to say this, and people are not going to like it, but this is actually a good update to this Firemakers event. Because recall at RuneFest, we talked about skilling diversity and changing the way skills work.
Mm-hmm.
Focusing in on the various ways of training skilling, lean forward, relaxed, and, you know, money earning, no money earning, that sort of thing. And we also, of course, did see that with the deep sea fishing hub, and, you know, that's the biggest one this year so far. And when you think about it, fire making training, not needing to spend any money, getting 290,000 XP an hour for zero cost is actually a good update.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's what I, it's not what I think of when I think active play, but then again, it, I don't know. It's really hard because even if you center all around the char training, I mean, when did Firemaker's Curse come out? Like 2011?
Yeah, something like that.
So, I mean, we're still really, really looking backwards.
Yeah.
But then again, let me be fair. I'm very, very biased against that quest because I had a terrible time making those symbols. Just a terrible time.
Right. And at that point, I would also like to ask, looking at this and determining what we're seeing with this here, it is less intensive, I think, than Fishing Frenzy at the Deep Sea Fishing Hub.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And people do that without questions. Now, could you imagine if there was, you know, this isn't happening, but it could happen. Could you imagine if this pitch can we got this week was augmentable?
That would be cool, but we already have that augmentable tinder box. So yeah. they box themselves in with that one.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't really use the invention XP for anything on this update, which is unfortunate. Actually, you might be able to, because the pitch can just needs to be in your inventory when you're line fire making. And presumably, if you had the tinderbox, that might also work as well. Though I don't have an augmentable tinderbox,
yeah, I
didn't test that. So that's something to test. Okay. All right, I'm going to make a note of that, and we'll check back for you guys next week on this, because that would be an interesting story to talk about. So, as I said, you know, the majority of the update here is indeed focused on charge fire making training, and it's what you get from that makes this update what it truly is. And, you know, I spent about an hour and a half down there. It's supposed to be an uncommon drop to get this pitch can from making this event. And, you know, I didn't get one. And the idea behind it is that, you know, it should be uncommon but not stupidly rare. It started with a grand exchange price of 1 million GP. And I don't know what it's at now. But I spent 15 million GP to purchase one of these pitch cans because I thought, you know, I did get fire making on my own accord once. I might decide to do it again one day in the future. So having one of these to test for the podcast and for my future use is probably going to be a good thing. And apparently 15 mil was a good price for that based on what you saw.
Yeah, I was seeing it floating around 30. The first couple days. In fact, when you said you got it for 15, I was just talking to my buddy the other night, like right before, like the night before I talked to you, and we were talking about it being 30 mil. I'm like, I'm not paying that. He's like, yeah, I'm not paying that either. And so yeah, I don't know how you managed to get a steal on that. and maybe they're going down now. I don't know. But
Was I logged in on Wednesday and I had it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you might have just found the right buyer.
And it might have actually sold late Tuesday, depending. But I logged in on early Wednesday and I had it.
Yeah, they were going for more. And there was no way I was going to pay that, and especially not pay that for fire making. Couldn't do it.
So you might be wondering, what does this pitch can do? Well, it's a little inventory item. It just sits there. It has 2,000 charges on it. You recharge it by completing one round of charge fire making training, you know, building symbols and whatnot. Then it recharges all the way to 2,000. So fairly easy to recharge. And it increases the year rate of making fires on the surface world. It works for line fire making and it works for bonfires. To give you an example here right now, Well, I have been told that it is indeed possible to get upwards of 1 million XP per hour doing Elder Logs with line fire making now. And the pitch can.
Yeah.
Previously, Curly Roots were, you know, the best. I don't know if they would still be after this, but, I mean, this does speed things up by a lot. Now, you might be wondering about the bonfire. I can tell you that using the Prif bonfire, because that's where everyone's going to do it, right? So
no. I'm going to do it in the Max Guild. What are you thinking? That's where you get your pets.
Oh.
Max Guild bonfire. Yeah. You know that? That's what you do when you don't got nothing else to do. You'll be there. You'll see this. You stand on the top shelf and you just throw logs on the fire.
Oh, boy.
While okay. you do Fashionscape. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, it took 1 minute 50 seconds to burn 27 logs without the pitch can. Any guesses as to what it'll go down to with the pitch can?
1 minute 15.
1 minute 24.
Oh, so negligible effect.
No, it shaved off 30 seconds of the run.
Oh, 30, I thought you said it was 127 and then 124.
No. 150.
Oh. 150. Oh, 150. Oh, 30 seconds? Really?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. Okay.
27 seconds, give or take. But, I mean.
Does that use a charge every time you're dropping
every time
that?
You drop a log, it is using a charge.
Okay. All right.
So you can burn 2,000 logs before you need to go recharge it. And then, you know, factoring 6 seconds into bank and whatnot, and then running some quick numbers on this, just using magic logs with no boost and the pitch can, this comes in at around 348,000 fire-making XP per hour, AFK, with magic logs.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad at all.
And, you know, you can kind of get an example of how quick it is to actually light these fires. Like, you can literally now, you know, just plop a log down on your action bar, right-click and choose light logs, and, you know, away you go. And, you know, the faster you click, the better you're off you're going to be for lighting these logs. You just got to make sure that you don't click too quick, because it feels like the actual tick time in between has been removed. And if your player's not in the appropriate position before you light a log, you'll drop the log and you'll leave the log in place. So that is what happened previously with fire making. But I mean, what we are effectively seeing here is we're seeing one XP increase to the AFK method. That's going to cost you, of course, money if you're dumping logs that you purchased onto a bonfire, or if you cut your own logs, hey, that's great. That's, you know, a very good way. 350K XP an hour AFK training method with magic logs. You know, if you want, you know, a higher boost upwards of probably, I would have to guess somewhere between 800 and 900K XP per hour, you can do those magic logs with line fire making. And, you know, just have that at it back in Falador like he used to. So they do say line fire making is back with this, but there is a substantial investment around it. So.
Yeah. Yep.
Overall, though, I mean, you know, you look at this update and it's Char's fire making has been revamped and there's a chance of getting the pitch can. Well.
Yeah.
Factoring all that away, what I see in this update is I see one free click intensive good XP training method at Char's fire making. I see a way to increase the amount of fire making training that you get both on the bonfire and also by making line fire making the superior option once again instead of just using the bonfire. So once again, it's a decision of choices, just like we had with deep sea fishing, and it just adds more to the fire making skill. And I think that's a good thing. And I think ultimately that makes this a good update, even if the headline was a little bit misleading with that. And with that, I can't complain. All I got to say is that we need another use for fire making.
I don't disagree with you necessarily that it has the mechanics that we are wanting to encourage Jagex to continue doing.
Right. And that's why I'm saying that, it's, yes, it's a good update. It was designed well.
Yes. But I guess the only difference I have with it is, so deep sea fishing was, at the end of the day, it was fishing, But Fishing Frenzy was a entirely new thing. That was a new way of doing it, and that's what we didn't get here. I'm not a big fan of the char fire making. I understand why they did it. It was probably a lot cheaper using existing assets.
Yeah.
Everything was existing assets. So I get that. But I would have liked to seen something more like a Fishing Frenzy with fire making. Let's burn burn ticks off of something, or I don't know, whatever you'd have to, like a whack-a-mole. I don't know, but we could do something like that, right? I mean, so it lacked that.
The freshness something. Factor.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, but overall, I'm glad about the mechanics. Right. I'm glad we're still going that direction.
And, I think it comes in at that point that we're talking about issues with the fire-making skill and not necessarily this update that need to be fixed.
Yeah, you might be right.
So, I'm content to leave that right there and move on to the mushroom people part of this update.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add.
And on that farm, Modrelly and Modraven have a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm, they had a contest, E-I-E-I-O. So Jagex hosted a competition with the intention to see what kind of ideas people could come up with for the player on the farm. And, they say it wasn't a contest of drawing skills, but a contest to inspire us. And they decided that one entry was so good and so full of opportunities that it will be added to the farm. And this was the suggestion from Arana of Mushroom People. And you can see the concept art on the news post for this page right here.
Yay.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure how this will work in, but hey, I mean, it's something, right?
Yeah, well, it's like the Zygon Knight things that we fight for Slayer, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. And there's some honorable mentions as well. And, one was even done in MS Paint. So, hey, I mean, looks like a kangaroo.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
They actually do farm those too, and I don't know why.
Oh, really?
I've yet to figure out why. Yes, I don't know what the deal is.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I guess we'd have to go down to Australia and ask about that then.
I guess.
I mean, do they use the kangaroo milk, or do they use it for kangaroo meat, or?
I don't know. We were on vacation, and we went to this like. Zoo outside place, and they had this whole kangaroo area you could go in and feed them and everything, so we're doing that, and the guy that was running, he's like, yeah, we used to work on a kangaroo farm down in Tennessee about 5 years ago. I was like, huh, okay, all right, so I guess you have farms of kangaroos.
Parnassius, if you're listening, please confirm or deny this, thank you.
Okay.
All right, so with that being said, let's move on to the patch notes for this week. These were particularly barren, so we'll just highlight a few of these here. The Lick of Gold nymph in the Lava Flow Mines will no longer attempt to gild a crystal pickaxe, which would result in the icon for the pickaxes changing to a bronze pickaxe.
Good.
Yeah. The tooltip on the Slayer counter now correctly tracks whether or not you've captured souls of the corrupted creatures and the soul devourers. That one was missing.
Good. Yeah.
Now, here's a really, really controversial one. And, is perhaps the only controversial part of deep sea fishing is the traveling merchant. The price of the livid plant at the traveling merchant has been increased from 500,000 to 1 million coins to justify the amount of points that it awards. And an issue has been fixed with the livid plant from the traveling merchant, where it was displaying the incorrect amount of produce gained. Now, recall for this, when this came around once, I spent 500 KGP, and I got almost 33,000 points.
Yeah. I remember you saying, didn't you just say something about this last week?
It was a couple of weeks ago.
It was a couple of weeks ago? Okay.
It was a couple of weeks ago. But, it was basically chopping off the last number there. And speaking of that, yesterday at the traveling merchant was the anima shop. And I got 1.5 million anima.
Yeah, I think that's about what I got too. Yesterday was the first day I ever found him. For one, I didn't know he was in that boat.
Ah.
And so that helped. And there's an actual friends chat. I had no idea. So now I know.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I bought everything, like everything they had.
Yeah.
And I even bought the effigy for no reason.
Right. And, you know, if you buy the map, you do have a chance of getting the red dot map, which gives you the Tavius fishing rod.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah. I didn't get that, but yeah.
Very stupidly rare, just like the Hazelmere's ring.
Mm-hmm. So.
Splitting granite into 10 pieces now awards the intended amount of XP. I'll remember last year on the patch notes, we had numerous issues with granite and sandstone being split and not awarding the right number of pieces. Well, it appears this is back in terms of granite giving 10 pieces, but not the right amount of XP. Dwarf multi-cannons are now built in a single step, just like the invention cannons instead of four steps, though they will still have four components. That's good to,
that's good
to do that. I never knew how to put mine together, so... the drop rate of obtaining raptor key parts from ripper demons and living wyverns has been changed from 1 out of 512 to 1 out of 256.
That's good. Those things are terrible.
Yeah.
You should have a chance to get something. That's just the worst.
Yeah. And I mean, do people still like those?
I don't know if people ever liked them, but they do them sometimes. Because you have to, but it's not fun.
Yeah. All right. And, I mean, you got to fight all four of them for that, so.
Yeah.
Ooh, the Wyvern crossbow is down to 26 million GP.
Good luck getting the ammunition, though. That's what I found.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that, I still go back to that update as being one that was, you know, had so much potential, but they perhaps shouldn't have released mini bosses anyways.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, here's some quality of life changes for the Firemaker's Curse quest. So the amount of damage taken from fire orbs during Firemaker's Curse has been reduced. And having a line of fire between you and an exploding fire orb during the Firemaker's Curse quest will reduce damage taken by 75%. You know, you're right. That was an annoying quest, wasn't it, when you think about it?
It took me so long. Like, it was one of those quests that you would have to try it every couple days to get a little bit further. Boy. Because otherwise you'd get so mad. And my problem was like, well, of course it was moving around and moving around with the magnifier that made it tough. But the whole problem I had was making those symbols in the amount of time that you had to make the symbols.
Right. So that's why you don't want to go back.
Never, ever. It was so hard.
Yep. All right. The progress overlaid within one of Char's trials will now correctly display within the entire game window instead of within the mini games window, which makes sense because it controls and can be limited where it'll appear. And players can now left click on funeral pyres to add their highest tier of shade remains to be ready for burning. And that's that's the extent of the patch notes this week. Really thin.
Yeah. Well, I guess that means there wasn't a whole lot to fix, right?
Yeah, hopefully. Or that could just be coming next week.
Could be.
So, we're in a situation here where the price change that was announced to the RuneScape membership fees that we discussed last week raised lots of questions in the community. So much so that Jagex decided that they were going to reveal what's coming in the next few months, kind of like they do at the beginning of the year. And they had to underscore once again that the information about the price change will only apply to new players or players who will let their subscription lapse. So if you're on the current plan, you're not going to have to worry about that. So, yeah, this actually resulted in two streams. A summer content stream and a stream about Elite Dungeons. So I was a bit taken back by this, that, you know, we inevitably got one of these streams here about this.
I was taken aback at how much is on the table for
it's pretty big, isn't it?
It's big, and look, you know, I mean, like, I think, like most of us, I don't pay the full price because I've had my account for so long. But one thing that I really think we need to mention is we are kind of spoiled when it comes to pricing in the gaming industry right now. Now, there's not as many subscription-based games as there used to be, but the ones that there are paying a way more than we do, and we get way more for our money. So don't freak out. I mean, it sucks when anything goes up, but everything's going up.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I mean that's just
that's just the way the world's working. And you know, I'll take a couple minutes, and you know, stop me if I go more than 3 minutes on this, please. But Okay. Basically, what has ended up happening is that, you know, the way world economies work is that they go in boom bust cycles, recessions, and periods of economic boom, and you know, after the 2008 financial crisis, we had a period where economies started to grow again. Canada's economy was one of the first that started to grow really well after that recession, and the U.S. economy trundled along a little bit slower. The U.S. average growth rate between 09 and 15 or maybe 14 was around, you know, 1 to 2% per year, which is a good growth rate for a developed economy like the United States, but it's not a boom economy. Typically, a boom economy is at around north of 4% growth per year, which hasn't been achieved in a long time. And the reason this is important is because that also talks about currency markets. And when our economies were slow, and when, you know, you had economies emerge first out of the recession like Canada's, you had in effect a clustering of world currencies, and that the difference between the Canadian dollar, the US dollar, the Great British pound, and the euro, and the Australian dollar was a lot less than it is today. But because our economies are growing, and because there's differences in the growth rates and what's happening in these countries now, the distance in terms of the amount of price between these different currencies has once again spread apart. And, you know, this is due to a number of factors. This is due to the new economic growth that is going on in the United States. This is due to the uncertainty in the UK following Brexit, because you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the UK now regarding the trade deals that will come out with the European Union, Canada, the United States, and whatnot. And while trade deals don't necessarily impact the currency market, the trade deals do impact investor confidence, and that in turn will affect the currency market. So that's why you saw in their post last week they mentioned Brexit, because, you know, Brexit threw that wrench of uncertainty into the UK when the rest of the world, you know, the European Union, the United States, Canada are having decent economic growth. So with that amount of uncertainty there, and combine that with the divergence of the currency values that we had previously, that is what causes the pound to kind of be tempered a bit. And Jagex needs to also factor this in from their side as well in terms of the currency exchange when they're exchanging American dollars for pounds and euros for pounds and so on and so forth. So that combined with just in general costs that are going to be going up in the development industry led to this price increase. And it, I think in the grand scheme of things, it was a modest price increase. So there's your economics lesson regarding currency and banking and how currency and banking affected this price increase in about 3 minutes.
Yep, in just that 3 minutes. Very good, Shane.
Yeah. So this summer we have the Elite Dungeons. We'll talk about those in depth in just a little bit when we go through the streams. Mm-hmm. The player-owned farm, we've already talked about that in terms of you know, breeding livestock and whatnot. Solak,
can we stop,
next month.
Can we stop calling it the player-owned farm? Because it's not.
Yeah, I think that would be fine.
Okay.
Master skill cape perks and improving 99 skill perks. That's on the official agenda here as well. So these are the things we can expect to see over the next few months. And, you know, these are some pretty hefty updates. So let's go through the summer content live stream.
All right.
You watched this one. What did you take away
from it? I did. You know, the first takeaway was, wow, there's some good stuff coming. In fact, there's some, like, really good stuff coming. So first, you know, Maude Osborne started off by talking that, you know, delays are a thing that happens in the gaming industry. And the reason that we feel it so much in RuneScape, and that Jagex has a reputation of pushing things back, is because they're so transparent. And they're a lot more transparent than other development studios, where is if there's a delay, you most of the time you don't even know it. And the only time you do is, like, you know, if there's like a major like delay where a game was supposed to launch on a certain date and then they have to push it back like 6 months. But with RuneScape, you hear it, you know it, you feel it. And so he was just kind of explaining a little bit about that. And I don't know, I get it. It makes sense because they are transparent, and that is the price that we pay, and it's a price that I'm willing to pay. Like, I'm willing to be disappointed a little bit to be able to know what's coming, just because I like to know what's coming, and we like to have stuff to talk about here on the show, right? So
yeah,
so that's okay.
I think the biggest delay that I can think of going back is the swap from expansions to unfinished business.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, I can't think of too many delays that impacted my gameplay a whole lot, or I was really super disappointed about. Not with RuneScape. I mean, really, I've had disappointments before, but not really so much with RS. So it's kind of, I guess it's kind of ironic with what he was saying. But there was a much more tasty little bit that he also mentioned, which was whether to do bank placeholders or wait for the whole rework. This is going to be pulled. The reason is that they were absolutely convinced that people would want the high-level mining content before a whole mining rework, and they couldn't have been more wrong. So he's like, we're fairly certain that most people bank rework means placeholders, but because of our experience with that poll, we're going to pull this. I've been saying this all along, and I'm calling
placeholders to win.
I would hope so. Because honestly, I mean, I know it has a different meaning for, like, for you and Sirion, who are interface junkies and know all the ins and outs and want it to look nice and clean. But to me, there's two things that RuneScape players have been wanting, and there's just some things that are, you can generalize about us. We've been wanting placeholders for a really long time. Two, we don't like change that much. And so, like, I don't know how much more of a rework we need when it comes to the bank. You have access to what you need in placeholders. Call it a day. I really hope it wins, because that's all we really need. I'd rather have that and less tinkering with the bank, honestly. That's just me.
All right.
Yeah. I know. I know you're like, ah, Shane's cringing over there right about now. Like,
well,
needs to be fixed.
Well, I mean, you know, placeholders are a nice idea in theory. And it's, to me, just a question of how will its implementation be? You know, will that be possible to do? Will it be something that can be done and be usable by the players and be enjoyed by the players if it comes out before? And secondly, if and when we do get the full bank rework, is that going to change the way placeholders work? And if it does, that is, you know, that is a big deal, because you are going to effectively be turning it on its head. So,
yeah. And I'm sure that wouldn't happen. I mean, he made it sound like the placeholders would be much easier, more doable.
Well,
so I don't know.
What you do for placeholders, here's a simple way of how I would do it based on what I've seen so far. You make you basically turn every banker into a quasi-salesman. And what the salesman does is the salesman has a little search window and or actually he doesn't even need a search window. The salesman basically has a list of all the items that are in your bank and can offer you a free dummy slot like that, and it'll just pop on top of it. And I mean, it should in theory be a simple thing to do, actually thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's so many items in game right now that are just dummy items. An icon that was once used in a quest to mash something together, and it just still sits in the bank right now. And an example of this is the sled.
Yeah. And a great, a great use for this is just not that you don't have to have duplicates of all these items so that your bank doesn't get constantly messed up. I mean, sometimes I don't even use a preset, even though it's so much easier to use a preset. I won't do it because it messes up your bank so much.
The number one reason I don't use presets is that they don't handle worn jewelry well.
Well, yeah, that too. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. This is something that I hope wins, and I hope we get. And I really think I've been saying this all along, and I'd love to be proven right. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it's nice being right.
But I have been wrong before, and usually when it comes to any vote, I'm on the opposite side. Thanks, Trump. Anyway, so I'm always on the opposite side, no matter what I vote for. So I'm not going to vote this time, and I'm going to see if maybe that will help get the result that I want. Right. Moving on, we got a little bit of a kind of a recap and kind of let us know what was going on with the mining and smithing. Everything's on track. It's progressing well, but they have like a huge list of stuff that they have to go through. The big things we found out last week with what they were going to do with artisans and the masterwork stuff. So,
Oh, that's actually a good point. Should we talk about the drop tables and the spring cleaner?
Yeah, because there really wasn't much else that they're talking about. Okay. There will be some like weapon diversity, so they're going to bring some of that in with the mining and smithing. But other than that, it's just everything's cruising and moving along as it should be.
So we did get the development design document for drop tables and the spring cleaner. So the fix for the dropped equipment is that there's going to be 28 different kinds of salvage split into 7 tiers and 4 different types. The tiers, of course, being bronze through rune and orichalcum. I don't even know what orichalcum is, but anyways, the idea behind this is that there will be different kinds of equipment. They'll high alk for different values, similar to what rune values high alk for now, and they're each going to have a different junk chance associated with them and the different type. So example, there'll be a sword, spiky, blunt, and plated. And the idea behind this is that these will be for your disassembly, so they will give you the invention components that you have been already getting when you drop and disassemble things. And the examples given here is one rune longsword now will give you one bladed rune salvage, bronze plate body, a bronze salvage, mithril mace, blunt mithril salvage, and an adamant square shield plated adamant salvage. So as you can see here, the idea behind this is that you get these untradeable items, you either alk them or you disassemble them. So I think this is a good way of doing it. And hopefully they will be able to push this through. For those of you guys wondering what this can lead to, I point you to last week's Informer article, 5 Steps Through Harmony with Jagex at informer.rsbnb.com, where I talk about, if you execute this correctly, the sky is the limit of what you can do. So
that was a good read.
Yeah, right?
I enjoyed it.
That's what happens when you think of, okay, let's apply what we've learned over the past, year and apply it moving forward, and maybe we can shift the paradigm on how RuneScape is built. So
yeah,
that's a good way of describing it. I'm happy with that. I don't know if the PVM community is happy with that. There might be some rumblings about that, but we'll talk about that in just a minute.
I really feel like it doesn't matter what they do. There's going to be grumbling that it's changing at all.
Yeah.
And so I say you just do it. You just do it. I actually just had this debate with one of my good friends last night because he's like, people might quit. I'm like, no one's going to quit. Like, no one's going to quit. And if they do, whatever. Keep going. Like, you got to take a stand and do what's right. You have to. Like, and I'm like, you know, he's talking about the PBN community. I'm like, nothing's going to change with the bosses. Nothing. And the value isn't going to change. So, no. I mean, do it. Just do it. That's what they want to do. It's the right thing to do. Do it.
Yeah. It's going to need to be like one of those situations like in the olden days where they give someone something to bite down on when they're about to amputate a foot.
Yes. Oh, you're right, though.
So yeah. Now in terms of dropped ores and bars, metal ores and bars will be removed from drop tables and replaced with a new item called Dragon Scales. And Dragon Scales are scales of the metallic dragon. They're acquired by killing those same dragons, and they can be found in the hands of all sorts of creatures worldwide. Rampant deflation of the value of gold caused by widespread of use of alchemy has caused some monsters to start using dragon scales as a proxy currency. Dragon scales come in different types corresponding to the different ores, rune, mithril, etc., and in their natural state, they are too interwoven with biological material to be useful, and no one ever found a way to smelt a useful material without destroying it. Enterprising humans have found a surprisingly simple solution. Exposing dragon scales to freshly oxidized ore of the same type causes the scales to petrify into the same ore. This can be done only in the process of mining, so dragon scales must be carried to mining sites in order to convert them.
Oh.
So you're still going to be able to you're still going to be able to get the ore from you're still going to be able to get the bars from creatures, but
it's like bonus.
It's like resources. Bonus resources, and yeah. You need to use mining.
They're not going to like that any better, though, because they're not about to go mining for extra stuff. So unless they're tradable, they're not going to like that either. But I love it. I think that's a really awesome and unique solution.
Yeah, it gives you that kind of ore. When mm-hmm. you.
It's like bonus XP for resources. Now that is innovative. I like that.
Yeah. And they say that dragon scales have been found to correspond to dragons that have never been verified to exist, such as Luminite or Kalium and even Necrite dragons. Whether these scales were created individually by the Dragonkin or some other experimenter, or whether the corresponding dragons simply haven't been found yet is unknown. I like how they work that in. It's like there's a lore piece that could have been involved with that, so it leaves it wide open here. So, you know, just to recap with that, you get a dragon scale when you're fighting, and you basically will take it to a mining site and, you know, expose it to freshly oxidized ore of that same type, and then that causes those to petrify into that same ore.
And, I really like that. Yeah,
it gives a use for the skill, and it's not just giving you, you know, a noted stack of 200 adamant ore after doing that aviancy task.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. Let's see. Not too much else on that, I don't think. The spring cleaner with the removable smithable equipment from drop tables, the spring cleaner will lose a lot of its purpose. Dismantle mode will be tweaked and two new modes will be added. Disassembly mode and elk mode, and these will only work on salvage items. So dismantle mode is, you know, where that rare case is where the smithable item remains on the drop table, so where they could still drop arrows or bolts, and dismantle mode will not work on them, and they will provide bars instead.
Mm-hmm.
Salvaged items cannot be dismantled, and other non-smithing-related items will continue to be dismantleable for now. This may change in the future as we look at the economy of other skills. So, basically, what this means is that if you get a smithable item, you're not going to be able to dismantle it. So that's good.
Yeah, that's fine. And it's, you know, having that
by bars.
Okay. Which is fine. Cause I'd rather use the alk mode anyway. I mean, the only reason you have it split up is so you can sell stuff and it does it automatically.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And I just wanted
and
to,
I've been, yeah.
And I just wanted to clarify that. I basically split that sentence in two, and it means dismantle mode will not work on those items that are dropped, and it will not provide bars.
Okay.
Which is what we should expect, I think, at this point. Mm-hmm. Alk mode, new mode on the spring cleaner, which have been upgraded to the 3000 level. And in Alk mode, any salvage that the spring cleaner activates will be automatically alked and is converted into coins to equal what it will have been alked for. No runes consumed and no magic XP awarded. And one charge on the spring cleaner will be used. And once again, Alk mode only works on salvage items. And then disassembly mode is for the spring cleaner 5000. And in disassembly mode, any salvage that the spring cleaner activates on is automatically disassembled. And this does not cost any charges from the spring cleaner. So,
okay.
You know, and I think these are fair compromises.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And it goes towards what I've been saying all along, which is, I don't think the monsters need to drop. They could drop money and it would be fine.
Yeah. But I mean, they want to keep it thematic too.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a fine compromise. Most people should have a spring. Well, if you don't have it, you can make it now. So yeah. Yeah. This is cool. I mean, it's available to everybody. So that's cool.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, you know, the next part of this was rather interesting, and this is going to be one of the only times we showcase something from that website on here. And you know,
not that website.
Yeah, we'll go quick through this here. But basically, there was a suggestion created that, hey, you know, some people don't like the mining and smithing beta, and you guys should pull it again because people in my PVM community. In my PVM community, don't like what's happening. And, you know, Mod Jack replied, and, you know, straight up he says no support. And he starts off by assuming, I assume your peers are mostly PVMers. This has always been a contentious issue, as it's a PVM versus skiller update. We've consistently gotten feedback from skillers that this is, in italics, the most important update ever, bar probably the bank rework. But PVMers complaining that it's a complete waste of time and is going to destroy the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, this is a classic example of something that polls don't really work for. It's called tyranny of the majority. And let's assume hypothetically that the RS player base consists of 60% PVMers and 40% skillers. And if we old school style polled the updates to this community, every PVM update would pass. So as you can see here, Jagex actually knows what exactly is happening with this.
Yep.
And
good. You know, I'm tired of that dictating everything.
Yeah,
anyway.
Me too. Me too. And you know, the good part about this is that it has been thoroughly upvoted here to this point because, yeah, you know, normally
that's
you would think
shocking,
that,
but
right?
Yeah. But it's good. Well, and you know, I keep going back to when I started playing. And it might be the same with you, Shane. Like when I first started playing, I never started RuneScape as, oh, I'm going to go do combat all the time. The thing that was so wonderful about RuneScape was it was this tapestry of all these different stuff that you could do, and it was all interwoven, and it was cool. You know, like I don't know how we got to this place where it's skill versus combat when it should just be RuneScape.
Yeah, it's a severe amount of polarization. So, mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, it's good to see this being discussed here because if it weren't, and Jagex didn't acknowledge that, that would be slightly concerning. And, you know, I think we knew that all along, that if all the updates were pulled, they would end up being PVM-based. So.
Well, and it's not like they're not getting anything. We're going to be talking about Elite Dungeons coming up. And wow, that is going to shock you. It shocked me. Solak, I mean, you're getting a new boss. You're getting these really awesome... you're getting updates this year. That's what I'm trying to say. You're not being left out. They're not, you're not like not getting any PVM updates. Like that will never happen. So it's just sharing a little bit here, you know. Sharing's caring, guys. It'll be okay.
Yeah. And, you know, they feel they did also hit the middle here, because they say if you check the recent thread about drop tables, you'll find players complaining to me, Mod Jack, that Slayer is worthless and due to a slight reduction in the ALK value of some drops. And you'll find other players also complaining that he doesn't get it because they left something profitable on the drop table.
Well, then you hit the right balance if you piss everyone off.
Yeah. So I don't want to highlight too much more of that, because we've had bad experiences with that website before. So
All right. No, I'm good with that. Let's move on, right?
So what else in our stream here today?
So we found out a lot about the farm. So are you ready to get some farm talk here, Shane?
Yes, let's have it.
So, all right, let's strap on your straw hat here and your bib overalls. We're going to go farming. So the first thing I got to point out, because it disappointed me a little bit. We ain't owning this farm. This ain't our farm. This is some old lady's farm whose kids ran away and her husband died. So we're working the farm, which kind of sounds like sharecropping to me, which isn't a really good thing, but...
Yeah.
Maybe in the UK it's more like feudalism or something. I don't know. Maybe they don't have the same history. But anyway, we're running the farm. So it's almost like a miscellanea type of deal. Kind of disappointed with that. But at the end of the day, it doesn't make a huge difference. It's just you want to say it's yours. So there will be an internal currency, and that's how we are going to get our animals, right? So the farm is basically, this is centering, at least for right now, unless they say different, this is all centering around livestock and stuff. So, and the way that you get livestock is to use this internal currency that is that you can use at a shop to buy your animals. But they can also come from quests, and they can also maybe come from drops. So there will be different ways of populating your farm. And the way that you get money is during your animals will have different growth stages, kind of like what they do now when you're growing a pet. But different growth stages, each time you check that you get a certain chunk of XP for each growth stage that animal goes through. And there will be these traveling merchant farmer type people who may come through and say, oh, I'm looking for sheep at this certain growth stage, so I only want to buy lambs. And then they will buy the lambs, you'll get that internal currency.
So in effect, it's ranching.
Yes, it's way more ranching than farming. Way more.
That's nice. You know, that happens a lot around here, and it'll be interesting to see how this fits into RuneScape and how it'll be for the XP-wise. Any rumblings on how big of an XP dump we'll be looking at for receiving or selling these?
They didn't go into that portion of it. I'm assuming, because this is just kind of the trying to get down the mechanic side, and something we learned, you know, through the whole mining and smithing thing is balance can come later. That's not necessarily a core thing that they worry about. So I don't know what the rates are going to be with that. They didn't really say, and different animals will take different amounts of time. Okay. So there will be like that tiered kind of system with that. I mean, you actually have a ton of options when it comes to this, because you can also let your animals grow all the way to a mature state. And once you have a mature animal, you get a perk, kind of like the Guthixian butterfly thing, you know, where you get the divination perks and it's global.
Okay.
So that once you have a mature animal, that animal, whatever animal it is, it'll give you some kind of perk like that.
So I assume the ship has set sail for slaughtering these animals.
We aren't going to be slaughtering these animals as far as I can tell, we aren't going to be doing it. We will be selling them. We'll be selling them to somebody that can do that. They do breed, so there's that.
Okay, so we're heading towards Pokemon breeding in game.
I guess. Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's all just, you know, I don't know.
That better happen behind the scenes.
Yeah. Right. RS is not that kind of game. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at. Kind of, there will be disease, but it's going to work a little bit different than it does with plants. The disease is actually going to be an opportunity for XP as well as being kind of a pain. But you have to identify what the disease is, and then you'll have to give it the appropriate treatment, and you will get XP for that. So, like I said, it's a pain, but you're also rewarded for it. So, and it works slower than it does with the plants and stuff. So, there's that. And would you like to know what we're going to be starting with at launch, our palette of animals?
Yeah, let's hear that. Let's see, what do we got?
So, we've got rabbits and chickens.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I guess people must farm rabbits. Okay. But there's rabbits and chickens and cows. We'll also have sheep, yaks, spiders.
Spiders?
Uh-huh. Because it wouldn't be RuneScapey if there wasn't something kind of quirky and weird. So, spiders. And dragons. So...
dragons.
You know? Yeah, dragons. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, and mushroom people.
Yeah, of course, yeah. The mushroom people. We saw that in our previous mushroom segment.
And obviously, you know, like the dragons are going to take much longer to get to a mature age than than the rabbits would.
So basically what I'm sensing here is we're going to have a full spectrum, ranging from the very beginning to probably having, you know, the very high level dragons and yaks and mushroom people up at the top.
Yes. Yes. And this isn't a daily scape thing either, because like, say you miss a growth stage, like your animals grow two stages before you check them again, you still get that XP drops. It'll just be...
Oh, good.
You know,
it'll be kind of like the kingdom then, where you can go back whenever you want.
Yes. Yep. Essentially. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. And we're getting new compost chain.
Oh, good. Oh, wow. Yeah. I wonder what I'll be able to hit now with my herb yields. Current record is 107.
Well, this one is even higher chance of not getting a disease and everything, and you get it from the poop.
Ah, of course. So. That's how it should be. And, you know, that's how most compost manure style fertilizers are made, you know, if you're mm-hmm. going full natural without all the dangerous chemicals and whatnot in them.
Right.
So,
and here's a fun addition that I think you'll appreciate. This is going to be kind of like, you know how farming is now, to where you see your crops, but it's still a social space.
Mm-hmm.
That is how the farm will be. So we will all be interacting on the same farm, but we will see our animals or what have you.
Okay. So, and I mean, that's good. And, you know, you can look mm-hmm. back at something like construction, for example, which is super instanced. And you need to realize that back in the day when construction was being built, they didn't have the technology to do a combined instance area like we're talking about here right now.
Yeah, and there's something I forgot to write this down actually, but so they're also looking at having, so you won't be able to trade your animals like on the Grand Exchange or anything. That's some coding stuff, and it's way beyond my ability to explain. But what we will be able to do is trade them amongst ourselves. So like one of the buildings, one of the barns, essentially, it's going to be kind of like a market type play, a farmer's market. Yeah, an auction house essentially. And what they're talking about doing is being able to trade these animals between ourselves, because they are actually putting in some stats that won't mean anything at launch, but later on could mean something. Like, for example, there will be a speed stat. Now, that doesn't mean anything at launch, but later on it might. And different breeding will have different things. Like, there's going to be strawberry cows and chocolate cows and vanilla cows.
Okay. And,
you know, so we can trade back and forth to try to breed different characteristics.
So it's going to be a kind of like a collection kind of thing then. All right, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that just feels like a farm back home, you know?
You know, I like everything except for, like, I wish it was our farm. And I wish, too, that there were some, just a couple allotments, just one or two allotments, so we could grow our hay, or we could grow.
Well,
our
there
stuff
is an allotment right next to it, because you said this is going to be at the farm just north of Ardoyan, right?
Yes, I think so. And
there's that allotment patch right there when you look at it.
Okay,
it's like right outside, and I mean, all they would need to do is they can add an extra gate out of it, because there's that huge farm right there. There's the wheat field, and then there's the farm, which is, I'm assuming, where it's going to be. So you just open up another gate there, and there you go. You got the allotment patch right there. And I mean, hey, if we can add, if you can add a door to the Lumbridge kitchen, because the old school has it, you can add a gate to the other side of the farm once.
So true.
This comes out.
Yeah, so true. So that's pretty much it on the farm, but are you excited?
Yeah, I am, and I'm really interested to see where this will fall in terms of the farming XP curve, and whether or not it'll be if this is more for rewards, or if this is going to be a good XP option. But we'll have to wait and see on that. So, okay. Also, yeah. Elite Dungeons.
Ooh, the update! I didn't know I wanted.
See, and, for me, it's okay. It's not something that's jumping out at me personally.
You know why that is?
Why?
Because it's 100% combat related. Not really your thing. But here's the thing. You know what this really is?
This looks like Dungeoneering the way it should have been built.
Well, okay, I'll give you that one. But this, yeah, they even admitted that. They're like, hey, Dungeoneering kind of has a bad reputation as a mini game. I'm like, oh, yeah, you just figured that out. but no, this is what most people would call a raid.
Like, that was also in my head as well.
Uh-huh, because this is what a raid should be. This is a raid. Like, but they can't call it that because, well, they already use
They already have that, and it would be too close to World of Warcraft raids.
Yeah, exactly. But this is what a raid normally would be.
And it just factors in Dungeoneering, which is great.
And, oh, I'm so happy.
You know,
so happy
I might
about
even
that.
Have to jump in and try this in story mode, because there is going to be a story mode for it where
there will be.
You're going to have a lower difficulty and whatnot. And mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to use all your skills. It's going to be a group activity. You're going to fight things.
For 1 to 3. Yeah, we're looking at 1 to 3. And the story mode you're looking in, I think they said the animals would have half their XP, maybe, and they hit
half. That's what I see.
Third,
here.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but the rewards will be very, very little for that. So that's kind of the drawback. I don't
fine.
See a lot of people doing that. But there's going to be a
that's
going to
be the people who are
going to
do it for the Master Quest Cape.
Yes. Well, and here's the lore thing. It's majorly tied in with something that happened this year. So, like,
and what's
I think
that?
It's the second. Well, let's just say the second boss is a Cressian. So we might be finding out a little bit more.
Oh, we knew it wasn't over.
Yeah, so it's not that's not a requirement to do the
right,
Elite Dungeons.
But it's going to be something that you're going to be able to take away from it. And for those who are wondering, we are, of course, talking about Pieces of Hate. And, you know, you can kind of get the sense of this because it starts with the Temple of Emanishi, which is, of course, in the Eastern Lands.
Yeah. Yeah, and there will be, I think they're looking at doing three of these to start with. But the first one will be the one. I mean, they're just coming out one at a time. So, yeah, and it'll be like mini quest, you know. The rewards, though, the rewards are going to be really nice. So you get Dungeoneering XP and you get Dungeoneering tokens.
I assume you also get healthy combat XP along the way.
Yes.
And good drops.
I will never go to Demon Heim again when this comes out. I can't wait. Oh my god. It's gonna be great. And so of course you have your trash mobs but your trash mobs are still gonna be
Oh, I just realized decent, we had a link in the show notes here for this. They are actually showing early concepts of this on the stream. Mm-hmm. I just realized that we had that in the show notes. I didn't know that they actually had an early concept of the first one here.
Yeah. So it'll be coming. Oh, and we don't know exactly, but they said another reward would be tier 92. So
we are looking for the tier 92 magic weapons then with this. Because we got the melee ones and the ranged ones are coming with Solak.
Right, but didn't the magic ones come out with AOD? Or did they not?
Let me look that up. Next Angel of Death. I don't think so. Let me just...
Okay. Maybe that was just the prayers.
Yeah, that was high-level prayers. I do remember that. Next Angel of Death rewards. Let's see. Wand of the Prey Soul.
Okay.
Let's see. Okay, that is tier 92 magic.
Okay.
All right.
Well, this is tier 92 something. They didn't say, but it's something. So I guess we can only speculate of what that will be.
I mean, I'm sure they'll reveal it in time beforehand, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And the other thing that looks really cool with these Elite Dungeons is it's going to use the loot chest mechanic from Sofenheim. So, yay. It's really cool. There will be a penalty if you die, though. So, and these things are going to have bosses, and these bosses are going to be for real. These guys aren't pushovers.
That's what people expect.
Yeah. So, I actually think this is, like, really cool, and I had no idea that... I had no idea this was coming, and I'm looking forward to it.
You know, I'm looking forward to it just from the story perspective and the graphics as well.
Yeah.
And this what they're showing here looks reasonably well fleshed out, too.
Yeah, and it like gets darker and darker the further you go in, which... It's going to be a pain in the butt for me, but hey, it's still kind of cool and thematical, and so I think it's cool. It's a nice little touch. And the stuff is aggressive as crap. So they'll have an aggressive like range, but if another monster is around the corner and within sight of the mob that just aggroed you, it will aggro also. So it can create this whole chain. So, yeah, it's different. I mean, it's really different. It's something we don't have.
And when you think back to Dungeoneering, and I said this when Menaphos came out, that Dungeoneering was indeed one of the very different updates that arrived. And I think, by and large, people do enjoy it, even though it is still considered a mini game. And you're going to need your Dungeoneering skills for this. So. Overall, this is a very logical extension to Dungeoneering. And, you know, I think if it's done well and the rewards that it brings are something that players are interested in, Recall that when Dungeoneering came out, it had rewards that weren't necessarily over the top, but they were decent. So, you know, we're not looking at a whole rebirth or a new Daemonheim here. We're just looking at a singular instance, and I think what we're going to have to take away from this is that this should be the next logical extension for something like Dungeoneering.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense. It seems to be at a good place right now. They're talking, you know, a couple mil an hour GP, plus you're getting dungeon experience and tokens. So, yeah, I want that. I want that now.
All right. I wonder what the second and third ones will be.
Yeah, see, that's, I don't know.
But if we look at the pictures here for the second and third one, or rather just the second one, the third one isn't done yet. But the second one is set in a what looks like a volcano with lots of fire around it and dilapidated areas. It's not the Tsar City. I don't know. Lava?
Maybe we'll have a Dragonkin tie-in.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. Or maybe something Karamja underneath the Brimhaven dungeon.
Mm-hmm. That could be.
Who knows? All right. Actually, yeah, that is something to get excited about. So that's good. Right on.
Yeah.
Okie doke. So our other video stream that was this week, and boy, they were just going crazy with these. The Game Jam live stream, which took place this previous weekend. This stream was 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
I went through it for you guys, so you guys don't have to, because, I mean, hey, that's what we do here.
That's what we do, yeah. I fell asleep at the last, 15, 20 minutes. I couldn't make it the whole time. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're just going to go over a bit of a rundown of what we saw here with this. And overall, I think this year's Game Jam is something that is that we need to take with a grain of salt. Because recall last year's Game Jam, we had updates that were talked about, but perhaps didn't necessarily arrive until much later. Key one being the Aura bag, which started off as a bag and got reworked over time to the update that we have today. So I'd just like to point that out to everyone that, you know, while we're seeing this here, we might not inevitably pick this up until a while. So the first one that was talked about, and we're going to run through these very quickly here because, I mean, they did 2.5 hours on them. There will be somewhere we spend more time. But the first one was Construction Contracts by Mod Ryan. The idea behind this is that you would go to a central POH house and you would get a contract of things to build, and you would go in and you would build them and you would get XP and maybe even some GP in terms of the reward for that. As of right now, it's basically go in, build, and that's it. And you might unlock some unique rewards throughout as you progress through the various construction contracts. So, you know, on the surface, this is a very simple update to do. It was prototyped in the entire weekend and, you know, what you're seeing on the live stream when they did this. So what did you think of Construction Contracts?
You know, as an update in of itself, I don't think a whole lot of it. It's cool. It's a nice little addition. But I am in favor of anything for construction. So, it's something. I mean, give me something.
Yeah. And I mean, you have a little list on the side that tells you what to build. You know, I don't see this as being a main construction training method, but it's definitely something they can add to change the monotony of the build remove cycle.
Yeah. And going to other houses, that's cool. It's something we've never done.
Yeah. And they're supposedly going to be randomly generated too. So that should be fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
This one, you know, was on the radar. You're gonna laugh when I say what my favorite part of this Game Jam live stream was. I don't know if you have any ideas, but
I'm guessing it has something to do with Mod Mark.
You're on the right track.
Yeah. what I heard his little section, I'm like, this is gonna be Shane's stuff right here.
All right. They also highlighted a bunch of quality of life fixes, which are in effect ninja updates, so there's not too much to write home about here. Some of these include a random pet override when summoning a pet, so you don't need to choose. It just chooses one of the random ones that you've selected in your pet's interface. Find out what you're missing for your museum kudos if you're doing that. Settings menu will remember which one you had open. Togglescape, adding an option to destroy weeds when raking a farming patch. And, you know, once again, adding to more game menu options. I don't think that's necessarily a good idea. They got to find some way at some point to limit that down. But this is, you know, just a sampling of some of the updates that were highlighted here. So,
yeah, the weeds are so worthless, though.
Yeah, but
it's
I mean,
a nuisance.
Right. And, you know, when you first start out, it's something that is used for making that first batch of compost. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And then never again.
Mm-hmm. Next up was the unstable skilling resource dungeons. And the idea behind this is that when you're skilling, you would receive one of these notes that would effectively open up a compass, and you would need to find the skilling resource dungeon specifically for you. On the surface world, it works kind of the same way as an Uncharted Islands map that you would get, except you can only get these while skilling. And you find it, you know, the same way you do when you're doing a scan clue. They will be on a timer, a 3-minute timer similar to the Premier Vault. So you have 3 minutes to take as much from that dungeon as you can. You'll be able to change the dungeon when you enter it or through your map between resource mode and XP mode. So the example given here is that when you enter the dungeon that they showed on stream, you would have had a choice to choose between, you know, getting a higher amount of woodcutting XP from these elder and magic trees that were in there, or you would get much faster resources in terms of elder logs and magic logs from the trees that were in there. So basically, you know, it takes, you know, a good, you know, 2.5 minutes or so to chop an elder log right now, right? So
yeah, and this reminds me of, wasn't there a promo? I remember a promo of us going into a little cave like this that had randomly generated resources, and we could collect it for like a 2 or 3 minutes. Can't remember what it was called. I swear we did that.
I can't remember what it was called either, but it did feel familiar. Maybe we're just remembering from it being the Premier Vault.
Well, I never walked into Premier Vault, though, so it's not that.
Okay. And, you know, they did also highlight that you would be able to pick up the stuff much faster than you can on the surface world because, you know, 2 minutes to chop an elder log, you don't want to spend 2 minutes out of 3 minutes, you know, just to get one log.
Yes.
So the idea behind it is that you would in effect, get faster resources or faster XP. And they want this to be one of the wow moments that they talked about in regards to skilling. Definitely be up there on that level that they talked about bringing into game at RuneFest.
Mm-hmm. And you can bring a friend.
Yeah, you can.
That's cool.
So, and the idea behind this is that, you know, it's to, I guess, spread the wealth of your skilling. So. This was a good update for me. It's one of those updates that, you know, can be put into game and is relatively, from what I see here, a low cost version of some other updates they could do, but it would have a huge benefit and it would make the skillers feel as though that they are being looked after. So
yeah,
that's my thoughts on that.
Yep.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and next up is the Mod Mark segment, which was huge. And, you know, he said that he was returning here not necessarily to create these updates, but he was returning here to pitch ideas and, in effect, give designs to some people who would might want to work on them. So,
he came in like a fart in a whirlwind, just throwing the ideas out.
Right. It felt like one of those RuneFest presentations because,
yes.
You know, he covered so many things here with this. But first and foremost, one thing I want to highlight here, and this is a big deal when it comes to where we've seen some other people go, like Mod Ollie, Mod Dag, and whatnot. Mod Mark says, quote, "He is not working on either of our currently live RuneScape products at the moment at Jagex."
Yeah, I noticed that. But it's RuneScape, but it's not a live RuneScape.
And that's
RuneScape Battle Royale! Watch out!
I mean, whatever it is, it can't be that bad if Mod Mark is working on it, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, is it going to be a MOBA or a Battle Royale? That's all.
I don't know. I think the Battle Royale would be harder to do because you would not be able to work the skills into it that well.
It'd be totally hard to do, but that's what's hot.
Yeah. I have a feeling this year's RuneFest is going to be pretty, pretty big in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, he wants to add more social fun elements to RuneScape, finding a use for underused content in-game, and talking to players about social tools that would help group management. And the biggest one, and perhaps the most existential one that he has here, is life imitating art, imitating life, and in this case being RuneFest imitating RuneScape, but RuneScape also imitating RuneFest. And the idea that he brought out regards to this is the costume parade, which would have an NPC pop up in the game world and would want to do a costume parade with a certain theme. And points would be awarded if the costume is appropriate to the theme. And, you know, with that, points would be also awarded for finding your matching twin if they did exist, if you did manage to put together the same costume as someone else. These would be pop-up events, you know, for potentially a unique costume or helping find someone their unique costume part that they might have lost. There is the potential to win older costumes or overrides from Solomon's store and maybe even a RuneFest ticket. And the idea behind this is, he said, that these wouldn't necessarily be a daily or weekly thing. They could potentially be triggered by players, or they could just be focused around special events in-game. What did you think of this?
So I kind of have two different trains of thought on this. One, this is fun and quirky and something that is very RuneScape-y. So that's cool. My fear is, if there's not something like a RuneFest ticket, I don't think anyone's going to do it. The only draw I see to get people to do this is either the ticket or the old outfits, which it's too bad. I mean, I'm not making a judgment on that. I think it sounds fun, but I don't see people doing it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And you know, it is pretty hard to get people away from whatever they're doing for XP.
Oh, geez, they might have XP waste if they're going to do something social like a parade.
I hate to think that we're at that point, but it is what it is.
That ship sailed, man. So it's like, yeah. I mean, it's a fun idea, but I don't know. I would be afraid of them. I mean, honestly, I'd be afraid of them wasting resources on that because I just don't see. Now, there could be a use for this. Now, that might be a really fun thing to do for, like, a Halloween event.
Exactly. Like, That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, like, that would be fun. You know, that'd be cool.
Yeah. All right. The next one is Portable Hunter, and the idea is that there would be a general push or an area for people to buy a hunting creature that is released into the game world, and you would need to find the hunting creature that you released for hunting XP, and you would gain more XP for finding another player's hunter creature. And the idea behind this is it would encourage people to hunt together and find each other's creatures for more hunting XP. And this is where I decided when I was watching this that, you know, even the updates that are being worked out of everything we've seen at Game Jam so far, this is the one that makes me the most excited, combined with the costume parade and whatnot as well. It's just that these are things that exist that don't exist in RuneScape right now.
You know, that's funny because this was actually my favorite of the whole Game Jam.
Me too. Me too. The Portable Hunter thing. And it's not even being built yet.
No, I just thought how cool would it be if you like get a bunch of your friends or a clan, like this would be a great clan activity, like a bunch of people with a bunch of animals and just let them all blah, just run loose like that. It would be really cool. I think it could be fun.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea behind it is that it would be fun, competitive, and the creature would start off being initially invisible and can pass through walls, allowing it to hide, and then it'll appear and make sounds and whatnot, and it'll become easier to hide as time goes on. And then animals caught go into the player inventory, otherwise they can escape, and you get more XP for catching someone else's animal. So
yeah,
Very neat. And, cool. You know, that is another way to revolutionize Hunter. And I think that's a reason we need that, because Hunter right now, as it is really, you know, it's
not
it's,
fun.
Yeah, it's not fun. And it's kind of like fire making, and if there's no use.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a little bit of money, but that's it.
Precisely. Mod Mark also had Pet Cetera, which would be a monthly mini game in which players turn into different creatures by eating different foods, and then they turn into pets and eat each other.
Yeah, that was cool. I'm not gonna lie, I like
and
that one too.
And in some ways, if RuneScape is going to do PvP, this is it. PvP.
Yeah, I mean, this was, I thought it was kind of cool.
Like, it's a fun, quirky PvP mechanic that doesn't need you to know the combat system in and out to be successful.
Yeah, it's almost like rock, paper, scissors, too, in a way, because it's like different animals could eat different things, and you couldn't eat certain things, but you have to grow. So it's like, I thought it sounded pretty cool. I'm definitely down for it.
Agree. And then chat channel improvements for friends chats, making it easier for players to be social, minimum level or playtime requirements that you can set for people to enter, right click to respond to broadcasts that people get when they get a pet or when they reach a certain skill level, clan chat list name display that alphabetically increase the friends chat size to 200 and add a notes section. So
I'm so excited about a right click on something instead of having to type. Oh my God, that would be so cool.
And, but remember, since this is one of Mod Mark's updates, it's not under construction yet.
I know, but wouldn't that be so cool? Oh my God, you talk about an accessibility update? Boom! I try to grasp people, but dude, if I could just right click on, you know, so and so got a whatever drop, yeah. That would be so cool, because sometimes I see it, but I can't type it. So that's just, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right.
Somebody pick up Mod Mark's idea here and make it happen.
Definitely. And the final one was use for shops, basically non-combat for skillers, crafters, rather than the PVM crowd. The idea would be to fight off invasions from nearby shops and aim to reward decent GP and XP. So. Basically it would bring people back to cities that are not, the, you know, Prif and whatnot. And it would basically say, hell, all these shops like the food shop and the fishing shop and whatnot, they're going to have a use. So, I think this is also something that the game could benefit from, because, you know, we talk time and time again that there needs to be something for skilling in terms of a dynamic gameplay form. So this could be it.
Yeah, I thought this was a really kind of cool idea. I don't know how it would be implemented. So this one's like...
Yeah, this one was really abstract at the time being. You know, just the idea behind it is here is he's got a list of all the shops, like the body armor shop, the shield shop, the amulet shop, the clothes shop, the silk trader, the mace shop and whatnot. And he said, how many of these shops here are empty almost all the time? And he said, hint, it's all of them. So it would definitely give a use to those. And I mean, when you think about it, we tend to be caught in our little Prif echo chamber most of the time who are playing. So,
well, yeah.
All right. Well, time to move on to quests with Mod Osborne and Mod Raven. They discussed Desert Treasure 2, that it was polled whether it should be a direct successor or a spiritual successor. Apparently the poll flipped halfway through, but what's ended up happening is that it's going to be designed as a spiritual successor, not a direct continuation of Desert Treasure. And I think that's fine.
You know, I feel like, and we will see this a little bit later too, I feel like there is a geographic bias here. I really do. Because he said that the poll was going towards a spiritual successor and then it flipped. But he had already decided to do a spiritual successor. And Mod Osborne's like, well, maybe, because it was later in the day, well, maybe that was geographical. I'm like, oh, I knew there was a European bias. I knew it. I knew you were UK biased. Now we have confirmation.
Yeah, and I mean, it's only natural for something like that to happen. And, you know, I'm from North America, and I am actually on the spiritual successor side of it. Because
really?
I think we're at a point where Desert Treasure was so far back in the Zaro's Fifth Age storyline that we progressed so far from that. It's like, what would we do beyond that, right?
You know, I am on the spiritual successor side for one reason, and that was that Desert Treasure was such a milestone when it came to the rewards and what it unlocked, that unless you're going to have something like that this time around, it can't be a direct sequel.
Exactly. And, so, you know, another thing is, in terms of what it should be talking about, it was fairly high that it should be the Second Age storylines and whatnot, and what the world was like in the Second Age, but also talking about lesser-known Majorat. And these are all things that we can do and can fit nicely into the Sixth Age. So the design document is up if you look at the Game Jam stream. We're not going to go too much into that because, I mean, at this point, it's a quest design document. Things are going to change with it.
Mm-hmm.
Mod Osborne still wants to do his Skill Cape quest for Hunter. The aim is this to have this to be the kind of the quest that people will ultimately want to do 27 more of after they do it. And
I'm just so against this.
The idea is that you'll need to take out one of the Rami Wildcats, and this is the fur that's used to make skill capes. And they're going to want to have something similar to it for each skill. And, you know, it does kind of make sense to be against that, because when you think about it, what does this mean? We don't know what the requirements are for it. But presumably, with being 99, that would mean Max would be required to get the quest cape. So yeah, there would need to be some way to do it without 99.
Well, so 99 and having that skill cape and the skill cape perk, you shouldn't have. I mean, that is the reward in of itself. You made 99. You shouldn't have to go and do a quest on top of that. I'm just not in favor of that at all. I'm in favor of quests having decent rewards and more quests and all of that, but not like this. I just don't think this is the right way to go about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, it wasn't necessarily clarified on here about what it would be, about the requirement. And I'm just not sure how I feel about that.
Well, no, and I mean, 99 is already very thin when it comes to being rewarded for that skill, for achieving 99. I mean, some skills is the perks on the skill cape. I mean, that's literally it. So to make the only thing that you get for achieving the highest level that you can achieve and tying that to a quest, that just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that. Oh boy, okay. The next one was Tales of Virago. The idea behind this is that this design was initially previewed, but they're starting over from scratch. It'll be an origin quest following the events of Sliske's endgame. So I don't think there's too much to say on that at this point, just that it's being considered.
Yeah.
Next, they moved on to Mod Stew with the new player experience. They're going to be moving new players over to Tutorial Island, as we talked about numerous times in the past couple of weeks. So that's actually happening. Ooh. Yay. That's very successful. Yeah. Glad to hear that. And with that, the new starting point will be in Lumbridge instead of Burthorpe. And they're later going to move people over to Burthorpe to do things like construction, for example, free-to-play construction.
Yeah, it's kind of like
1-5.
It's almost like they're extending the whole new player experience, but they're also making it less rigid. So I was very pleased with what they're doing with this. This looks good to me.
Yeah, and they're also going to be bringing in the achievement path system, which is essentially a list of things that new players can do in any order, and it gives them things to complete, and it even shows large one on here, like, for example, getting to Prif or the World Wakes. So,
yeah, so cool.
And the last big portion of Game Jam was Mod Timbo's Onyx Jewelry segment, Alchemical Onyx Jewelry. There's the Ultimate Teleport Compactor. Name is still to be determined. It's going to be the ring piece of jewelry. The idea behind this is to get even more charges out of the teleporter compactor and combining more items into one item. And you'll need 100 times the maximum charge of a given item. So to fill it for glories, you'll need up to 400 glory charges. And the maximum amount of charges this thing will hold is 5,000. The design is fairly set on this one. They worked on implementing it this weekend, so that's just great.
Amulet, yeah, that's cool.
Amulet-wise, there's Grace of the Elves, and this will give you half drain rate reduction on Saren prayers, the skilling prayers. There's also a chance to spawn a crystal chest while skilling that'll access the rare drop table, which means a chance to get Hazelmere's ring while skilling. They want this to be a skilling wow moment. And ability to access the max guild portals from anywhere, providing you've already attuned them.
Okay.
And in terms of the necklace, they're calling it the Ingenuity of Humans. That's the working title. It needs more features before they decide that this is actually what it's going to be. Essentially, it'll have maximum unlimited teleports to the Invention Guild, increased disassembly speed by 50%, store up to 500 charges for Sign of the Porter, and they want to see what else they can add to it, but that's going to be in the necklace spot.
All right, so more bank saving spaces.
Yeah, and I mean, it's definitely time to combine that one for the ultimate teleport compactor. I mean, we're long overdue to the point where you might want to teleport to the lighthouse, but you don't want to break out a new game's necklace, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think it's the teleport compactor and probably the Grace of the Elves one that I'm most interested in. So.
Yeah, well, new jewelry is always cool too. Like I do like having options like that. So yeah, I'm looking at the Grace of the Elves as well.
And it adds on to reasons to build those alchemical onyx pieces. So
yes, keep doing your Reapers.
All right. Now, with that being said, there are two more small things with this. The Cooking Guild rework, they are effectively using this as a blueprint of what they want guilds to become, you know, with 4 to 5 tiers of guilds, including Apprentice, Accomplished, Artisan, and Master. And there'll be mini quests to unlock the different tiers. And the examples they give for the Cooking Guild are Dough Balls, Brewing, Smoking Meats, Stewing, and Contract Cooking.
So that's cool. But what is up with all these little mini quests to unlock stuff? Like,
I think the definition of mini quest is changing.
Okay.
I think it's turning into a series of achievements to complete or tasks.
What does someone that is really quest centered think about that? Is this a good thing or not?
You know, it's a good thing as long as it's just not a check-off to-do list. As long as there's something that you can gain from it that you don't have before, and if it touches on lore, that's all the better.
Okay.
So. Mm-hmm. And final piece in Game Jam was the clan segment with Mod Shawnee. Clan chat showing the number of people inside chat. Mute members of clan chat. There is no timeout on this, so if you mute someone once this update hits, they will remain muted until you turn that off. Oh. So that's just something to think yes. about.
I love it. I've got a list.
And finally, Avatar Warden can be given to any rank. Previously, right now, it's Admin Plus.
That's cool. Well, won't matter since we won't have just a certain number of them anyway.
Yeah. So, and, you know, this is for the first time in a couple of months that Clan Quest might be looking at redrawing some of the ranks because we actually have a rank for Avatar Warden now because of this. So
the
usefulness
of that
rank will just completely disappear.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we have a large number of admins because of the warden situation. So
yeah,
this will be good.
All right. Well, that's it for the Game Jam live stream. I don't think there's anything else to mention. Mod Mark was definitely the highlight of this for me. Even though his weren't being built.
It was cool. Of course. Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. And it looks good. I try not to get too excited about Game Jam stuff. Although we did see quite a few things like actually materialize from last year's, but we'll just have to see how it goes this year.
Indeed.
But if we could get some of, you know, Mon Marks, I would be happy.
Yeah, or get him to say what he's working on.
Yeah, that would be cool too. But then again, maybe that I'm willing to let be a surprise because I don't want it torpedoed ahead of time. I feel like there have been attempts before at branching out that got torpedoed before they were ever out. So yeah.
All right. Moving on to tech news then. So you might remember back in the day, in the mid-2000s, there was something called the Opera web browser. You know, many people used Opera who didn't want to use Firefox at the time, or, you know, later didn't want to use Chrome because they felt Opera was superior for some reason or another. And, you know, they clung to that browser until they decided that, okay, we're just gonna effectively become a Chrome clone by adopting the Chrome rendering engine. And that led Opera as a company to determine that they need to do something else. And what they eventually decided on was that they would start focusing on VPN, or virtual private networking. So with that being said, Opera has decided to close down their VPN service, which, I mean, when you think about it, that doesn't really leave them with too much. So Opera VPN will be closed for iOS and Android on April 30th, but it will offer users on another product called Surf Easy VPN that it acquired back in 2015. And the idea behind this is that you would have had to pay $29.99 for a yearly gold subscription in order to access this VPN, and that just gets transferred over now to Surf Easy. And it's Opera, and I don't know what they're gonna do next.
I just want to know, like, what are you doing that you need a VPN that you would pay $30 a month for? For a year.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, the number one thing I can think of is accessing a Netflix service from a different country that you're at.
Oh, okay, yeah, maybe that makes sense. Okay.
Or effectively, if you were out at a public Wi-Fi hotspot at a coffee shop and you wanted to instead, make sure your connection was secured and you were going through your home network.
Yeah, that would, I mean, I guess those situations make sense. That's not what I thought of first, but yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know if there's much else to say about this, so I think we can leave it at this, but I just wanted to point out that Opera doesn't have much left in terms of what they're offering. So.
Oh, Opera.
All right. Are you a Google Chrome user?
Yes, actually I use both. I use Chrome and Edge. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Google Chrome just launched an update with Chrome 66 that makes it so that auto-playing web videos are now muted by default.
Woohoo!
Yeah. This was first proposed back in January, and they delayed it to wait a little while and, you know, work on the feature a little bit more. But it's finally arrived for people who are running Google Chrome, and, you know, Google's actually got a really smart algorithm defining what should be played, and Chrome is going to take note of the websites that you play video on and websites that you want to, consume the media app, let's just say. And if it thinks that you do, it'll not mute that website for it. So the idea behind it is that you'll get websites like YouTube and whatnot, because you click play, it's going to know that, hey, we shouldn't automatically mute YouTube. So, and you can see this too if you go to Chrome:// media engagement, and you can see since the feature just came out today in the web browser, the only page that I have opened up here is YouTube in terms of it knowing which websites it should be unmuting sound for. So I, you know, this is a great feature for me because when I do the podcasts, I have to make sure that whatever page I am going to be loading up is muted because otherwise you guys listening to the show will also hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So, very pleased about this.
Yeah, I'm really happy. Really happy about it because I use Chrome quite a bit. Sometimes I still use the Edge just because of there's a few different accessibility features that are a little bit easier with that. But oh man, that's awesome! It's not going to blast your ears from clicking on a site. Yes.
Yep.
Finally, how long did it take to get this?
Years. All right. Now, Apple has also cut the production of HomePods following lackluster demand. The idea, of course, behind HomePod is that they would allow everyone to access Siri from inside their house without needing to use a phone or an iPad to do it. And, you know, we all know and we've discussed this many times in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Siri is not as good as Google or Amazon when it comes to dealing with this.
No, she's the hot chick. She is not the smart chick.
Yeah.
She's not the smart hot chick.
I mean,
that is for someone else that I can't even say her name right now.
They just need to figure out a better way of making this happen and, you know, figuring out a way to make the service more smart with the next version of iOS that comes out.
I think you can't really underestimate right now. People, I think, are a little bit leery of the home assistants and all the eavesdropping and stuff. I mean, I would be curious to see what happens over the next year to see if people continue to pull away from that or if this was just because it's been in the news lately.
Yeah, apparently market share in the U.S. For sales over the first 3 months in 2018 were 73% Amazon Echo, 14% Google Home, 10% Apple HomePod.
Well, wouldn't another factor of that be, I mean, I know Apple's always more expensive, but they were considerably more expensive with this, and there was, and for no reason other than Apple.
And I mean, the people who were purchasing it did ultimately report that it was a good speaker. And that it offered good sound, which, I mean, sure, you could use it to listen to music and whatnot, but there are better options for that. So we'll have to wait and see what Apple does with Siri with the next version of iOS that arrives. But I think we all knew this was going to happen with this product when it arrived.
Yeah, I think they were just banking on people using it that were already in the Apple ecosystem and just didn't work out.
Yep. All right. So moving on to our skill of the month update for the month. You know, it's still the fletching skill of the month. Sorensen 57 is still in first place with 23.2 million XP. Parnassius is in second with 9 million XP, and X-Blades is in third with 728,000.
Man, nice guys.
Yeah, I don't even know what you would do for high level fletching.
Broads.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Always the broads.
Right,
broads,
we did talk about that. We did talk about that. Okay.
You can do it while you're fishing, Shane. Did you know that?
Yeah. I remember we had a little discussion on that now. Oh, boy. I don't think I would ever go that far. All right, so moving on to achievements this week, we got a good number of them. So starting off on the 17th of April, we had SilverWiz9, or Paul, with 120 attack. It's Cavallario with 99 divination, on April 17th. Touchpad Pro with 120 construction on April 16th. It's Cavallario again with 99 magic on the 16th. Mama Mystic with 99 dungeoneering. It's Cavallario with 99 farming. And finally, Wily with 99 thieving on April 16th. Congratulations, everyone. Nice.
Yeah, very, very nice. We also have Mr. Zaros 357 with 99 constitution on April 15th. We have I defend with 99 divination on the 14th, April 14th, in obviously. And we have Row of Snow with 99 crafting on the 14th. We have Darth Ray, 120 attack on the 13th. Nice. Elven Badass with 99 fletching. That's a badass name. I like it. Jade Gizmo with 99 smithing on April 13th. And Jade Gizmo with 99 invention on April 12th.
All right. Nicely done, everyone. I like those achievements.
Yeah, very good.
So what do you got for pick of the week this week?
This week, I am picking a game. It's been out for probably like a year and a half. But it's kind of cool. So do you like to play poker, Shane?
Sure.
Do you like to play poker and not lose money?
Sure, absolutely.
That's the way to play, right? So this week I'm picking Prominence Poker. It's a free-to-play game, and it's not your it's not the free-to-play game that you have to buy stuff for. You're given a generous amount of chips to begin with, and you can play – basically, you play people it's got a multiplayer and it has a single player, so you can kind of get used to it. It's all Texas Hold'em, and you know, make your avatar, and you kind of fashionscape your avatar. You know what I mean?
Oh, but neat. It's for
Prominence Poker. Yeah. So like, the only way you know like each other, like the way you stand out, is by the clothes you're wearing and by, you know, the rings on your fingers and stuff like that. And it's pretty cool. You know, you can have table items, you know, you can have a drink or a cigar or just other stuff. And they give you different little boosts and stuff. It's a really fun, relaxed game. It's real chill. I never really could play, Hold'em before. Like, I've played five card draw because I could hold the cards like right in front of my face, but I could never play Hold'em because I couldn't see in the middle of the table. But with this game, you actually can, because your cards are you know, it's right there on your screen, like right to the left of you. You can do all these different emotes, and like body language and stuff is cool. Like, if you want to look at your two whole cards, you can see that someone's looking at their whole cards, because you'll see them like look down, and so that it's kind of cool like that. And you know, of course, you can taunt people or, you know, whatever, if you bluff them right out of existence.
And it looks like from the screenshots here, there's a number of different environments that you can play in too.
Yes. So sometimes you might be in a casino, but other times it looks like someone's basement. You know, like it's some underground. Thing. Like I played, so when you're doing the single player, it's a series of different places, and you'll have to beat like the henchmen, or, you know, you'll be at a table with like two or three NPCs. Once you beat all of them, you unlock the right to play the boss, and it's just one-on-one. And so you're going against the boss. There was this one that where you're playing in a meat locker, so it's the dude, he's got a butcher's,
yeah, I see that,
you know, apron. You know, he's got a cleaver on the table, or you're like, you know, so but it's a lot of fun. It doesn't cost a dime. I haven't spent a dime, and I've had a blast. It's real fun if you like poker.
All right, so that's Prominence Poker. You can find it on Steam. Mm-hmm. Looks like it's Windows only. Yeah, it is Windows only. So,
PS, I think it's on PlayStation Network too.
Oh, okay. That works then. All right. Yeah. Sounds good. Prominence Poker. Link will be in the show notes for that at update.rsbnb.com. What have you been up to on RS this week?
Well, I've been doing something a little bit different. I was helping a friend out who is writing a 1 to 99 invention guide. So we've been running just some different stuff. I've been kind of helping out with the combat related stuff. So
I've
been
doing
some, I've been going back to the old God Wars in the Sarah encampment and seeing how long it would take to do a scythe, and, you know,
and because the verdicts aren't.
The verdict is, I still think that's probably the best way in a combat sense. But right now we're kind of looking at which is better, Frenzy or the Sarah encampment because we're not sure. It could go either way. So it's very cool. It's been fun, you know. It's a change of pace, something different, you know. Other than that, I've just been doing charge packs and hanging out in the Invention Guild, making more empty charges. So, yeah. How about you, Shane?
Well, this week, as I mentioned, I spent a lot of time clicking. A lot of time clicking for that thing known as the pitch can, and then I finally decided, nope, we're not doing that. We're just purchasing one of these, and we're gonna see what happens with that. So that was actually probably the entire week until past the weekend. But on the weekend, I did do some treasure trails that had been stacking up, and I mean, you gotta always point these in the right direction as being something good to do because, I mean, looking at this here right now, one, I got two Zaros items with them worth 860K, and then one with a brown cav for 577K. And of course, the upside of this now is that these prices are probably going to go up a bit because, you know, we just had the design document for the Alchemical Onyx. So, fingers crossed on that, and might cause those items in the treasure trail market to spike up a bit. But beyond that, not too much. So I think that's it for this episode of Update, unless you have anything else.
That is it for me.
Okie dokie then. Well, I'll just remind everyone that if you want to find us, full show notes and whatnot are available at update.rsbnb.com. And if you want to watch our weekly bite, which releases every Monday, just head over to youtube.com/rsbnb. And if you want to chat with us in game, that's Friends Chat Bits Bytes. And we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBnb Update. Take care, everyone.
See you later.